Were you gonna say something?
Oh, they used to do a song called "Everybody's Everything Is Beautiful." Everybody's beautiful in their own way.
So, the caption, the opening caption to this chapter, in the version I'm looking at on my phone, says that Paul surrenders his rights. You know, yes, he has the absolute right to these things, but he's surrendering them because he's putting on that posture of preferring others. And that's evidence of the fruit of God working in your life, is when you stop thinking and looking and acting for yourself, even if you have the right to. And then he brings it to verse 24, talking about how are we supposed to pursue this service to God. And so he brings it from surrendering his rights to then, like, even humbling himself to perhaps inconveniencing himself for the sake of others that he might win them over. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't like to inconvenience ourselves. Mm-hmm. But he's saying here, like, he's inconveniencing himself. He becomes like a Jew to win Jews. He becomes like somebody outside of the law to win them to the law of Jesus. But now he's like, and when you do all this, verse 24, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one person is going to receive the prize? So run as if it's you. Win, right? Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable crown, but we have an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. He's running with a very specific purpose, and that's to do the will of God. I do not box as one that beats the air. His punches, he's saying, are directed very specifically and with very intentional reasons. He's not shadow boxing. But I discipline my body and I keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. What is he talking about? Like, he's not talking about, so there's different versions of that verse that says, like, he puts his body into subjection. And Christians of the past have actually used that to justify, like, beating themselves. Flagellation. What he's talking about here is that he's not going to let his outer body, his flesh, his natural desires rule his inner man that he knows is led by the Spirit of God. He's going to put his physical body and discipline himself physically so that it does not lord over him.
And this goes back to what you were talking about with balance. It's, he talked about how he has freedom to do all of these things, but he's still subject to being responsible.
When he uses their logic against them earlier too, he's like, all things are lawful, but not everything's beneficial. Yeah. All things are lawful, but not everything is good for me.
And I think that's what he's kind of addressing here. He's already taught them at some time that you have all these freedoms. And it's easy for people then to take advantage of that freedom, say, well, then I've got this freedom, I've got that freedom. I think he's correcting them, saying, yes, you have that freedom, but use it for the kingdom of God, not for your own selfish purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think in verse 7, or in chapter 7, might be chapter 7? Might have been 6. I forget where he's like, you know, if you're a slave, don't try not to be a slave anymore. But rather, like, use your status as a slave to glorify God.
Well, one of the other things that hits me in this chapter, this is very typical of the Jewish synagogal system. Notice all the questions. That's how Jews argue in a synagogue. They don't. It's all questions. They don't make statements. It's all.
You mean they have three opinions?
Yeah, but look at the way it's all questions. Am I not? And it's all ended with a question mark. That's So when he says, I become a Jew, or when I'm around a Jew, I become like a Jew, that's what it reminds me of.
I think another thing that's worth note, for a couple different reasons, is in 9. He says, for it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the mouth of the ox that treadeth out the corn. Doth God care for oxen? Or saith it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that ploweth should plow in hope, and that he that thresheth in hope should be partakers of his hope. So, I do think it's important that, and interesting, that God cares how animals are treated, in that, because if we're cruel, that cruelty builds something in us. In the same way that when we treat people. It's not so much that the way that God cares about the animals, but it's because of the fact that he cares for us.
Well, his eye is on the sparrow, so.
Right.
And,
Let the little shout of Beretta.
What?
What?
The old... There used to be a show called Beretta, and Keep Your Eye on the Sparrow was part of the theme song. Oh. Every time you say that, that's all I think of.
You think of Balaam, right? And getting really angry at his ass for the King James and beating it with a stick. You know, he was a person that was very focused on what he wanted and on his needs, and to the point that he was willing to throw a stumbling block in front of the Jews so that he could get what he wanted and be seen right before man. Like, when we choose what we choose to do, even when it's something that doesn't have the same rights and authority in an animal, that builds something in us. We have to be conscious of that. The same reason it's very easy. Maybe that's not only true for me. If I spend too much time watching new stuff and getting irritated, I find that I'm just more irritable, and that's not really bringing out the Jesus in me. Yeah. I'm walking around mad because I've been watching the news.
I'm the same way. Like I said, years ago, I had stopped watching it altogether because I discovered I was hating people I didn't even know.
Right.
For no other reason than I was being told to.
So we've been looking at this through the lens of like a preacher serving. Now let's look at this like through the lens of people that are actually served, because we are. I have employees. Ryan has lots of employees. Do you have employees? Yeah, you've got employees. Aaron does not have employees.
Not anymore.
Sorry. Congratulations.
I'm very happy to be free from that.
Thank you. So let's look at this now from the view of those that like are being served by people, naturally speaking. Where was I?
Employees.
Yeah, I know. Let's see.
I want a raise.
Hang on, it's tough. Yeah. We're not very injury, blah, 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 blah. Like Barnabas says it right. We serve soldiers on expense. So who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Okay, what does that mean? You paid your armies to fight because they're taking on the risk of dying for you, right? Who plants a vineyard without eating any of its fruit? What farmer or what worker works in the vineyard and like doesn't try it out when it produces, right? Who tends to a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I say these things on human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle the ox when it treads out the grain. It is for the oxen that God is concerned. Does he not certainly speak for our sake? Is what Aaron just read. So my overall point I was trying to make, and I lost the really like part of it earlier, was is like, you know, I've got employees and they work and do what I say. I need to reward them. I need to be gracious and not be stingy with them. That's what I was getting at. Because Paul's talking about up here all the things he has a right to, that he willingly forfeits so that he can bless people. Don't forfeit the rights of the people that serve you, though. Don't demand that they put down their rights to do what they're supposed to do for you. Reward them. God doesn't like stingy givers.
I think that goes for our relationship with God too, because the other thing I was going to say with the muzzling the ox is that we're supposed to serve with hope and with that relationship. It can be easy to get into this idea of serving and just laying your life down and just and grinding, but that's not what we're supposed to do at all. And it's not in just anticipation of a future reward, but there's a relationship there. But we have to choose to accept the peace that God gives us, and the joy, and that hope, and that building there, by serving people, by serving the Lord, and accepting the fact that it's not just a matter of trying to put our lives down, but that we do it for a purpose. Does that make sense?
I go back to the prodigal son, working on the farm, wishing he could have the food that he was feeding the pigs, and decided to give up that earthly life altogether to go back, because he knew at least his father's servants ate better than what he was eating.
But the brother, bringing it into what I'm saying, the brother continued to work there, but he never worked there with any kind of joy or hope. It was drudgery and misery for him. He was almost a prodigal son in spirit.
And both of them put themselves in that position.
It's true. And that brother that was stayed with the father was outraged that the father never slaughtered the fattened... Fattened ox. To celebrate with his friends, versus the prodigal son was celebrating with his father and the servants, not with his friends.
The father made it pretty clear, had you asked, I probably would have given you one.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
But you didn't ask.
But my point is that the prodigal son that was slaving away, or the son that stayed, that was slaving away in the fields, wanted to celebrate with his friends.
Right.
Not with the father or the servants. His heart wasn't right.
Casting Crowns sings a verse about the prodigal son in one of their songs. I don't remember what it is, but it talks about how he identified with the son that stayed home and did everything right, but his heart was just as bereft as his brother's.
I think in that parable, not only is there individual responsibility, I think of the overall responsibility, and I know people may disagree with this. I say it's the father set the tone. And I think fathers set the tone for their families. And one of the things that I think fathers forget to do is to appreciate their kids, praise their kids, encourage their kids. Even when they do wrong, you can say, you can do better than that because you're so good at this. How many times have I had to say to you, Natalie, I says, you're too smart to do something as stupid as that. At least it was a compliment, backhanded as it may be. But, you know, the father sets the tone. But not disregarding the individuality of the elder son and the younger son either. But I wonder how the father treated the elder son. I know I can count on the older son to do this. The young son's just a mess up.
On that question, though, the father ran out to the son, which is something that is just not done in that culture at all.
That's right.
So would you propose then that would be the first time he humbled himself in that way?
I would suggest that it was the father that should have done a lot more hugging.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
To that family. For that son, the older son, to be as hard as he was, something was missing. And the youngest son, I think he was railed on when the older son, and this is my opinion, and you can see it different. I think the father would say, I wish you could do it like your brother. Mm-hmm. And I bet you the older brother said to the young son, yeah, you're such a dummy. You know, and I think it just, the flavor of that grouping is the father's fault, primarily, not taken away from the individual fault. And I think it's interesting when Paul writes in this that he is talking about, he does this as a father to the church. Mm-hmm. And he's doing it in a cradle of love. and instructing his people. Pedro said.
And the dad knew the story of Job, and he didn't want his kids partying too much, because then, you know, look what happened to Job, right?
You know what? There's something that a lot of people go over. I remember you talked about it years ago. It was there, he had 12 kids, and they would have a birthday party on their birthday. Mm-hmm. That's what it was.
Yeah. Oh. They would and get together and party and stuff, yeah.
I don't think that there was anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
I mean, your parents gave you birthday parties.
Sure. Sure.
But back to your point, absence makes a heart grow fonder. I think the kid being gone, Dad started to look at himself. Why did I lose my son? Why did he leave me?
Certainly very possible. Yeah.
Hmm. What do y'all think verses 15 to 18?
For my part, I have used none of these rights, nor have I written these things that they may be applied in my case. For it would be better for me to die than for anyone to deprive me of my boast.
That one.
Keep going?
Yeah, that's the thing. I was like, huh? But keep going.
For if I preach the gospel, I have no reason to boast, because I'm compelled to preach. And woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this willingly, I have a reward. But if unwillingly, I am entrusted with a commission.
That's what I was talking about before. Mm-hmm. When you are doing it out of obligation, mm-hmm. because you're forced to do it,
right.
There's no reward for that.
No.
But when you're doing it because you're a servant to the Lord and you want to, there's a reward for that.
Right. One is holding God hostage because I do this, God. And the other one is, I want to love and serve you, and so it's what motivates it. You can be doing the right thing in both instances, but if you're motivated by, you know, the box checking, I guess, then that's not going to give you the reward.
Yeah, well, and any of us, most of us either have employees or kids at one point or another, and if you ask... If you ask one to do something and they're very happy to go and do it, you're going to want to reward that.
Right.
But if you have to stand over them and say, you better do it, then you are not going to reward that no matter what.
Don't forget it.
What?
Don't forget it.
Well, I mean, it's the same in any relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, Justin will say, I'm doing this because it makes you happy. And I'll say, well, it doesn't make me happy if you're not happy. I only want you to be happy about doing it.
I'm not happy about doing something I don't want to do, but I feel good that I'm doing it.
If he wants to make you happy, and he's happy that you're happy, so he's doing it with a happy heart because you're happy.
He's letting me know how unhappy he is.
That's right.
Preach.
Y'all need to get
married. She's talking about dinner tonight. I had to work late, and then when she was like, "Are you almost home?" I was like, "Well, but why?" Well, I made dinner. I was like, "Okay, what's for dinner?" She goes, "Broccoli, rice, and Chinese chicken."
Yeah.
Well, let me stop and go get a rotisserie chicken for like us. It is, but I mean, it's like I'm on a healthy thing right now. Like I don't want like frozen fried chicken. So I was like, I'm going to Walmart and get a rotisserie chicken. She's like, well, no, we'll wait for you then. I was like, well, no, feed the kids. I'll get a chicken. I'll come home. No, it's important that you're here with us.
We want to eat as a family.
I was like, okay, fine. I'll just come home and make an omelet. She's like, well, why are you irritated now? And I was like, how come you're not happy? You're getting what you want. Like, I'm serving you. You should be appreciative and happy. Well, no, I'm not happy because you're not happy. Well, let me go get a freaking chicken. Like, yeah, it was a whole thing.
It wasn't a whole thing, but it was a thing. Not a whole thing. Anyway, he was filled and happy.
I'm starving.
You know what I think about this? Yeah. Is, Paul was called, he had a commission. You know, God called him to the Gentiles, you know, Jesus was for the Jews. And maybe just he's kind of going through his thought process. Sometimes we have to reevaluate where we are, because maybe things aren't going just the way you feel like they should be going, and you're like, am I in the right place? Mm-hmm. Am I in the right place here? And, you know, as I read this, it seems like he's kind of thinking over his calling. About, that's just how I read it, mm-hmm. You know, and he's like, you know, I don't want to be too harsh here, and I know that God's called me to do this, and he's kind of going through my prize, you know, the prize catch is I want people to know him. Am I doing it the right way? Am I going to their level? Am I not being the person? I just thought he was maybe going through a conflict, you know, because sometimes we're going along and we just go, this doesn't feel like I'm in the right place. And you had a conversation with Tori, my daughter, and she's a teenager, and she's an adult, and she just is thinking, what am I doing? Am I in the right place? And am I in God's will? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? And I think it's good for us to reevaluate, but sometimes when we get in a place where it's like, but I know Paul was called to do this. I mean, sure. Don't you agree that that was his calling? But it was almost like when you read this, he's going, am I doing this right? Am I, you know, am I the person I'm supposed to be to these people? And, you know, so.
Absolutely.
Just my interpretation of it.
I think that that is a practice that we all have to be better about doing. Just being reflective, like, Lord, am I in the center of your will? Am I doing what you've called me to do? It's kind of like even just, you know, before we take communion, just evaluating our hearts. Is there sin that we need to repent from? Is there something that's going on that we need to surrender or lay down? And that's how we grow. It's just always being in a position to be soft.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if there's anything that Paul does through all of his letters is he shows us what that looks like.
Yeah.
And so we can follow his example.
Yeah.
So.
I just want to comment. We're all pressing into the city of God as sons and daughters. And there was only three gates in the Jerusalem that led to Zion. The water gate, the fountain gate, and the horse gate. And that should interest you, Jill.
Yeah, I like the horse gate.
The horse gate, yeah. You'd probably write through that.
What was the fish gate?
No, it was three gates. If I said fish gate, I mean, if I ever said that in the sermon, which you, with your photographic memory, it's the three gates. The horse gate, water gate, and fountain gate.
Oh.
But I was thinking that since you love horses, and every horse is different. Every human being is different. Mm-hmm. And what separates the amateur rider, I think, from the expert rider, is he can sense the best way to approach people. And I think that takes practice. Some people can get it just automatic. But it's a trained, experienced skill. And I agree with you, Jill. I think this was a concerted effort on Paul's part to say, am I getting this right? Because Barnabas had to go get him out of Tarsus after he was ordered to go back to Tarsus before they even brought him out into ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think also the weight of what he had, and the persecution, the weight of knowing what he had done in his former life was constantly nagging at him, you know, because he knew how hard he could be. He had the capacity to be nails, murderous. And so just, I think that was something that also, you know, God can even use our past to deal with us in our present. Like he can, he was able to get, I don't know what I'm trying to say, I'm kind of distracted, but.
Well, the manager at my farm, he has PTSD, very severe, and part of the reason that he's healed is training the horses, but he did horrible things in the military, and he, you know, has those memories, and he knows he's forgiven, and but it doesn't, it still disrupts his sleep. You know, he has to be out there pretty isolated, I mean, with the horses, and so that helps. But I do think what you just said about Paul, I think it probably, he had to have those, I mean, he probably still had the memories, even though he knew he was forgiven, but I mean, I don't know about you, but I've done things and it comes back and I know I'm forgiven for it, but I'm like, I'm glad to meet you. I'm so glad to meet you, but anyway, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Well, the Pauline epistles prove that because he references what he did.
Yeah.
Something was constantly on the back of his mind. I used to persecute the church.
Yeah, he did.
Now I have to care for the church. The church is constantly on my heart.
Right. Well, and he was always worried that would diminish,
yeah,
that people wouldn't believe him or it would diminish his ministry.
Good talk. And Jane, you want to add anything? You look very deep in thought.
Do you usually have a food analogy, Jane? Like a watermelon or?
Well, you did the roast, so my job was complete. I told you how to do it.